Chapter 3. Agreement impossible, and the first who says the contrary, indeed. But we will say the contrary so long as there is a place to say it in. And in spite of your threats, mind what you are saying, Bat Finn. Mind what you are saying, Uncle Prudent. I maintain that the screw ought to be behind. And so do we. And so do we. Replied half a hundred voices confounded in one. No. It ought to be in front. Shouted Phil Evans. In front. Roared 50 other voices, with a vigor in no whit less remarkable. We shall never agree. Never. Never. Then what is the use of a dispute? It is not a dispute. It is a discussion. One would not have thought so, to listen to the taunts, objurgations, and vociferations which filled the lecture room for a good quarter of an hour. The room was one of the largest in the Weldon Institute, the well-known club in Walnut Street, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, USA. The evening before there had been an election of a lamplighter, occasioning many public manifestations, noisy meetings, and even interchanges of blows, resulting in an effervescence which had not yet subsided, and which would account for some of the excitement just exhibited by the members of the Weldon Institute. For this was merely a meeting of balloonists, discussing the burning question of the direction of balloons. In this great saloon there were struggling, pushing, gesticulating, shouting, arguing, disputing, 100 balloonists, all with their hats on, under the authority of a president, assisted by a secretary and treasurer. They were not engineers by profession, but simply amateurs of all that appertained to aerostatics, and they were amateurs in a fury, and especially foes of those who would oppose to aerostats, paradises heavier than the air, flying machines, aerial ships, or whatnot. That these people might one day discover the method of guiding balloons is possible. There could be no doubt that their president had considerable difficulty in guiding them. This president, well known in Philadelphia, was the famous Uncle Prudent, Prudent being his family name. There is nothing surprising in America in the qualificative uncle, for you can there be uncle without having either nephew or niece. There they speak of uncle, as in other places they speak of father, though the father may have had no children. Uncle Prudent was a personage of consideration, and in spite of his name, was well known for his audacity. He was very rich, and that is no drawback even in the United States. And how could it be otherwise when he owned the greater part of the shares in Niagara Falls? A society of engineers had just been founded at Buffalo for working the cataract. It seemed to be an excellent speculation. The 7,500 cubic meters that pass over Niagara in a second would produce 7 millions of horsepower. This enormous power, distributed amongst all the workshops within a radius of 300 miles, would return an annual income of $300 million, of which the greater part would find its way into the pocket of Uncle Prudent. He was a bachelor, he lived quietly, and for his only servant had his valet Franklin, who was hardly worthy of being the servant to so audacious a master. Uncle Prudent was rich, and therefore he had friends, as was natural. But he also had enemies, although he was president of the club among others all those who envied his position. Amongst his bitterest foes we may mention the secretary of the Weldon Institute. This was Phil Evans, who was also very rich, being the manager of the Wilton Watch Company, an important manufactory, which makes every day 500 movements equal in every respect to the best Swiss workmanship. Phil Evans would have passed for one of the happiest men in the world, and even in the United States, if it had not been for Uncle Prudent. Like him he was in his 46th year, like him of invariable health, like him of undoubted boldness. They were two men made to understand each other thoroughly, but they did not, for both were of extreme violence of character. Uncle Prudent was furiously hot. Phil Evans was abnormally cool. And why had not Phil Evans been elected president of the club? The votes were exactly divided between Uncle Prudent and him. 20 times there had been a scrutiny, and 20 times the majority had not declared for either one or the other. The position was embarrassing, and it might have lasted for the lifetime of the candidates. One of the members of the club then proposed a way out of the difficulty. This was Jem Chip, the treasurer of the Weldon Institute. Chip was a confirmed vegetarian, a prescriber of all animal nourishment, of all fermented liquors, half a Muslim, half a Brahmin. On this occasion, Jem Chip was supported by another member of the club, William T. Forbes, the manager of a large factory where they made glucose by treating rats with sulfuric acid. A man of good standing was this William T. Forbes, the father of two charming girls, Miss Dorothy, called Doll, and Miss Martha, called Matt, who gave the tone to the best society in Philadelphia. It followed, then, on the proposition of Jem Chip, supported by William T. Forbes and others, that it was decided to elect the president and the center point. This mode of election can be applied in all cases, when it is desired to elect the most worthy, and a number of Americans of high intelligence are already thinking of employing it in the nomination of the President of the Republic of the United States. On two boards of perfect whiteness, a black line is traced. The length of each of these lines is mathematically the same, for they have been determined with as much accuracy as the base of the first triangle in a trigonometrical survey. That done, the two boards were erected on the same day in the center of the conference room, and the two candidates, each armed with a fine needle, marched towards the board that had fallen to his lot. The man who planted his needle nearest the center of the line would be proclaimed president of the Weldon Institute. The operation must be done at once, no guide marks or trial shots allowed, nothing but sureness of eye. The man must have a compass in his eye, as the saying goes. That was all. Uncle Prudent stuck in his needle at the same moment as Phil Evans did his. Then there began the measurement, to discover which of the two competitors had most nearly approached the center. Wonderful! Such had been the precision of the shots, that the measures gave no appreciable difference. If they were not exactly in the mathematical center of the line, the distance between the needles was so small as to be invisible to the naked eye. The meeting was much embarrassed. Fortunately, one of the members, Truck Milner, insisted that the measurements should be remade by means of a rule graduated by the micrometrical machine of M. Perot, which can divide a millimeter into 1/15 of a millimeter with a diamond splinter, was brought to bear on the lines, and on reading the divisions through a microscope, the following were the results. Uncle Prudent had approached the center within less than 6/15 of a millimeter. Phil Evans was within 9/15. And that is why Phil Evans was only secretary of the Weldon Institute, whereas Uncle Prudent was president. A difference of 3/15 of a millimeter. And on account of it, Phil Evans vowed against Uncle Prudent one of those hatreds which are nonetheless fierce for being latent. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.